Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Terence Corrigan. Let's get into our first news story of today. And the big breaking story of today has been that President Cyril Ramaphosa has fired one of the Deputy Ministers of Trade, Industry and Competition, this being the DA Deputy Minister Andrew Whitfield. Initially, when this came to public light, the reasons were not clear. However, some media places are now reporting that the alleged cause is insubordination, specifically that the Deputy Minister Whitfield did not inform Ramaphosa's office that he was going on a trip with the DA to Washington. This was back before the Trump meeting. There was a lot of diplomatic trips to Washington to try and plead South Africa's case before the Americans. The DA went on one of those trips and Andrew Whitfield went with. Now, I've heard that he says that he did inform the president's office, so I'm not actually sure. That's just something I've heard. I'm not sure if that is what he said. But I think it seems all a little bit beside the point. Now, it is true that ministers have and deputy ministers have been fired for going to events without permission in the past by Nelson Mandela and Thabo Mbeki once each. But this seems very flimsy indeed, particularly when all of the misconduct that goes on with ministers sort of constantly all the time that gets overlooked. Then you consider the fact that there are rumors that President Ramaphosa is going to have to fire some ANC ministers and that he's trying to buy cover with his own side for this by getting rid of a DA minister on a flimsy pretext. I don't know. A lot of this is still unclear, and the reporting over the next couple of hours and days will make it clearer. But Terence, based on what we know now, what do you make of this? I know the DA has said they're going to have an emergency federal executive meeting to discuss the consequences of this, but what do you think are going to be the consequences?
Well, I think, first of all, we, as you correctly say, we've got to await the full context. I suspect that this is part of a package deal to get rid of others. But I do think that something that the president has done with, I think, a considerable degree of relish is he's trying to rub the DA's nose in it. The fact that, you know, he ultimately is the power deciding. Because as I've said before, my view is that President Ramaphosa sees himself in the first instance as the president of a party, not the president of a country. So, you know, I think that is his major strategic goal in dealing with the government of national unity. I think the DA is in an invidious position. Their sort of impotence in this sense is being showcased. There's very little they can do about it because this power the formal power does reside with the president to constitute as executive. They can talk about leaving, but remember that's a card you can only play once, and I think they're sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't. But you know, is there something else that they could do, which is to, you know, be the perpetual burr under the saddle? You know, they showed during the budget that they are not without influence, or they are not without without coercive power. So I watch the space with interest.
Indeed, you know, that's a sort of difficult, as you say, it's a difficult position to be in. And I think that they had actually sort of managed quite a good equilibrium inside the government of national unity, and that, you know, the DA for the most part seems to have accepted that this is a government of national unity in name only, that it is only the most sort of barest of thinnest alliances for very specific narrow reasons, and not a genuine attempted cooperation. And I would not be surprised then if the DA retaliates in some way against the ANC in parliament for this, because, you know, you don't want to just look like you're being walked over. If they don't, then, you know, maybe Ramaphosa will get rid of another one. Interesting dynamics to watch, but I think, yeah, this is the next crisis that I think we could probably see coming in the government of national unity.
Right.
Okay. This next story caught my eye, and I think you know, quite often on the show we talk about red tape, and we're often not very specific about red tape. In fact, red tape is a thing that no one ever says they're in favor of, even when they are. I think to get a sense of the scale of red tape that is unnecessary bureaucratic regulations that South Africa has is this report by Treasury, which has found that heads of government department must compile 216 reports a year to comply with audit requirements. That includes 43 HR reports a year and 73 finance reports. Reports include a knowledge management maturity report, two sets of quarterly and annual performance reports for different entities, strategic plans, operational plans, and midterms and final evaluation reports of strategic plans. The government, the finance minister, Enoch Godongwana, points out that if you take away public holidays and weekends from the year, that basically every single day, government heads of department are meant to compile a report. And Terence, I'd like your thoughts on this, but my sense of this is that this has been because the attempt to the way of trying to deal with corruption and inefficiency in the public service has just been to demand more reports, and then you can figure out what the problem is. And then those reports get produced, and if they actually identify the problem, then nothing is ever done about it because the problems stem from policy and political patronage. Right. And so more reports are demanded. I don't know. What's your take on this?
Well, first of all, understand what red tape is. It comes from literally the red tape that used to be wrapped around government documents, I think, in Britain. And this was kind of how they were bound together. Red tape, in a sense, refers to compliance burden. And in some ways, you know, it's necessary. You know, if you can just spend money willy-nilly on the company credit card, you know, you're heading for a problem. Now, in 2004, there was, as far as I'm aware, the only study on that said South Africa spent about 6.5% of its GDP on compliance demands. The cost of red tape was 79 billion at the time, you know, but that's 20 years ago. I don't think anybody has updated that, and I imagine it's pretty much, you know, where it is. That's pretty much the level it's still at. Remember, that's,
I wouldn't
like,
be surprised if it's higher now.
More than 1 rand in 20 is spent on dealing with compliance. As far as the state goes, the real issue there is that while you want these processes, they depend on a well functioning system. You know, the Germans or the Swedes or, you know, the Chinese invented bureaucracy. You know, you have in a sense far more bureaucratic systems and civil services oriented towards process. But the thing is, everybody knows their responsibility. They carry it out efficiently, and you know, I think there's like 4 times as many steps involved in setting up a business in Germany as there are here. But the thing is, everyone knows what they mean to do. We have this sort of we have a compliance heavy mindset. We have bad policies and we have incompetence. You put those things together, and what you end up with is a lot of people spending a lot of time doing things that just that consume without producing.
I think that's exactly right. And you know, we wouldn't need so many reports if things were actually done when the reports identified problems. I know that Helen Ziller, I think maybe a decade ago, I don't know, time flies, brought up that the Municipal Financial Management Act had all of these strict requirements for, you know, describing how you're going to spend money and why, and lots of compliance stuff to prevent money being spent corruptly. But all that had happened in effect was that people who followed the rules had to take a very long time to do anything, and so were slow and inefficient. And people who didn't follow the rules just didn't care, and they just broke the rules, and that was it. There was no compliance. They got the bad audit result, and they said, well, that doesn't make a difference in my life. And I think this is another great example of that. It's, you know, it's a typical kind of failing management solution to, or bad management solution to a problem is, if something is wrong, demand more status reports.
Yeah. No, you know, if you this is kind of bureaucracy without accountability. what the Germans and the Swedes and the Danes and whatever have is bureaucracy with accountability. So yes, if you have not filled in form E77795, you know, there will be consequences for that. But look, I know from I know how inflexible these things can be in South Africa and how destructive that is. Trying to deal with my with my late brother's death because he died abroad and therefore didn't have the documents that they expected to be in front of them, but they don't issue that document in another country.
Right.
But no, there's just exactly. No sort of understanding of how that works.
Exactly. All right, on to our last story, and this is regarding the Walter Sisulu University, where on Thursday, the 19th of June, the Deputy Vice Chancellor for Institutional Support and Development, Sitemba Mapabane, was shot multiple times while seated in his vehicle at the entrance of the university, at one of the university's facilities in Mthatha, where he lived. It appears, according to the police, that the motive was definitely not robbery, and it has the signs of an assassination, although that hasn't been confirmed by the police yet. The university council chairperson has said that private security is now going to be provided to all senior staff members, especially those holding strategic positions, and that basically there have been threats made against members of the staff for not complying with various demands from sort of organized crime groups. This is similar to a situation that happened at the University of Fort Hare, I think it was a couple of years ago, where you also had attempted assassination shootings and the like. I think a bodyguard was killed, if my memory serves me correctly. So, Terence, this just seems to be another example of mafias operating in our country, in this case specifically targeting universities.
Yeah, look, anywhere where there is a big institutional concentration in South Africa, there's likely to be money, there's likely to be resources, or something that can be passed for that. Now, in universities, you know, you have things like admissions to prized degree programs, you have procurement, you large procurement budgets. You know, there's been scandals with selling degrees. All of those things, you know, can add up to very lucrative criminal opportunities. So yes, you know, if that opportunity exists, why not intimidate? That's unfortunately become a part of the way our society functions. If you can do it on a construction site, why not in the academic world? I think it says something and nothing particularly good when, you know, that's what's happening to professors and academic administrators. Those are people more associated with large egos than with death threats.
Indeed. And of course, the money being spent on security guards for these people is money that can't be spent on the education, that can't be spent on the students, that can't be spent on all the things that you want the university to be spent on.
Yeah, facilities.
Indeed. All right. That's all the time we have for today. We hope you found this show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.